you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honor. May I please report? My name is Thomas Ingalls, and I'm a member of the Virginia State Bar. I'm here to introduce Paul Bartolacci, who's a bit pro hoc vice in this matter, to argue on behalf of AGCS, Marine Insurance Company, and Indemnity Insurance Company.
And where are you from?
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm from Cozen, Ohio, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania.
Well, good. We're glad to have you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You may proceed.
Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Two? All right.
May it please the Court. We represent two insurance carriers who provided insurance coverage to Harris Teeter Department Store located in Arlington, Virginia. The Harris Teeter Department Store sustained significant damage as a result of a flood event, a sewage backup that occurred on May 11, 2012, that caused damage to the flooring in the store, shelving units, coolers, freezers, not simply the inventory in the store. Now, I recognize that the claim in this case is limited to a claim for the inventory and goods that were in the store as their contents. But in the context of the overall issue here, the overall event, the damage was much more severe than those items. In addition, there were claims submitted and payments made by the insurance carriers for the cost of removing the damaged goods and cleaning up the store in order to be able to return it to its use prior to the cleanup. The damages paid by my clients were approximately $1.8 million. The trial court, in our view, erred when it dismissed this case at the demurrer stage. The trial court rendered a decision without any written opinion, either by way of a letter or a formal opinion. So we are left to guess the reasons for the trial court's decision, and I have to argue a couple of different alternative positions that we think the trial court may have relied upon. As the court is well aware, at the demurrer stage, the allegations in the complaint are taken as true and reasonable inferences are drawn in favor of the non-moving party, here the appellants. The plaintiff's claim in this matter is based upon the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and in particular, Article 1, Section 11, which seeks damages in the nature of an inverse condemnation claim. Our theory is that the flooding or sewage backup here occurred because the county, the appellee, failed to properly operate and maintain a sewage treatment system, and in particular, a sewage treatment plant. We would be prepared to participate in discovery and we believe establish facts that would show the county had notice of a problem with the sewage treatment system. They ignored equipment failures. They adopted what we believe to be a policy.
May I interrupt you with this question? I realize the argument is being made to limit or to try to interpret more narrowly the Livingston case. Is there any request that the court reconsider Livingston, and if so, on what basis would you suggest we should do that?
Well, I think Livingston is actually consistent with our case. I think the different factor that the court has to consider in light of Livingston is the new statute, Section 219, which specifically defines what a public use might be. And we suggest that even under the new statute, Livingston would be decided similarly today as it was back in 2012. So we think Livingston is actually consistent with the position that we have advanced in this case, and we don't see any reason for the court to reconsider its decision in Livingston, except as it may be impacted by Section 219, which we think actually is helpful to our position in this matter.
But doesn't 219 have a gateway at the very end, subsection E? Nothing in the section shall be construed as abrogating any, quote, quote, dot, 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 rights otherwise available to the property owners independently of the section.
Well, Section 219 also contains a subsection 4, which specifically defines what a public use might be for purposes of an inverse condemnation or eminent domain proceeding. And we think subsection 4 clearly applies in this instance. So the Harris Teeter store occupied this space as a lessee, and I think that becomes important as the argument moves forward. There are four elements to an inverse condemnation claim. One, that the plaintiff or the injured party owns the property that's damaged and it's private property. That's not an issue here, I don't believe. The plaintiff or the claimant's property is somehow taken or damaged, and we think there's no dispute as to that. Element three is that the damages incurred by the injured party were for a public use, which I believe is the primary argument asserted by the county. And number four, that the governmental agency failed to pay just compensation for that damage. We think if you look at Livingston, which involved a similar situation that resulted from an overflow of a creek, or I'm sorry, a canal that had been relocated and its depth challenged because of the buildup of sediment over years that caused flooding of neighboring properties through both the storm sewer system and the sanitary sewer system. Those situations are very similar to what happened here. In this case, we believe the public use argument is addressed in the following situation. Clearly, the sanitary sewer system was being operated by the county for a public use. The question is, was the taking or was the damage of the Harris Teeter property part of that public use? And if you look at the decisions involving similar cases that go back even before Livingston, for example, McDonald, which was a case interestingly discussed in one of the earlier arguments today, that involved a sewage discharge onto an adjoining property, Burns, a storm sewer discharge, Kitchen, a creek overflow. Those cases are similar as well. In this instance, the backflow of sewage into the Harris Teeter location was, in effect, a means for the sanitary sewer system to continue to operate and service other customers served by the same line. This is not a single dedicated line from Harris Teeter to the sewage treatment plant. This is part of an overall system, miles of piping. So by discharging the sewage into the Harris Teeter store, the county was able to continue to provide public use.
You claim it was done purposely?
No, we don't claim it was done purposely. We claim it was done as a result of what are essentially policies and procedures that were adopted by the county in the operation and maintenance of this facility.
Can I interrupt you again?
Yes.
So under that last thesis, you bridge the gap between the majority and the dissent in Livingston by saying that that the overflow of the line into Harris Teeter permitted the system to continue to provide the public use to everybody else.
Yes. And I think that's exactly correct, Your Honor. You said it more accurately than I did. But we do think that's the difference between the dissent in Livingston and the majority issue in Livingston.
Is that a design issue?
It's not so much as a design issue, but if the lower court would have looked at our proposed amended complaint, there are a couple of factors that come into play. Number one, we think there would be evidence established in the trial court that there were older abandoned pumping stations that were taken out of service, and those systems were now served by this particular pumping station, which caused it to be overwhelmed. We don't think the original design was improper of the system, but we think policies were put into place that allowed this situation to occur, and as set forth in our proposed amended complaint, we think there would be evidence showing that the county knew there was a problem, they had prior issues at this location, they chose on some occasions to bring trucks in to handle the overflow sewage as opposed to correcting the situation. There's information that we believe we could prove that the county embarked on a cost savings basis in order to not go forward with maintaining and repairing equipment that was damaged. So we don't think it's a pure design issue, the theory against the county would be their establishment and use of policies and procedures that would allow this backup.
Your position is that it was a conscious choice, maybe not a design, but nonetheless a conscious choice from the county to benefit certain citizens of the county over other citizens of the county by handling whatever the problem was with the discharge in the manner that they did. Is that a fair statement?
Well, whether it was conscious or not, it was certainly the result of what they elected to do. Now, I can't tell you that we're going to find out in discovery that some county official said, we knew that when we took on these policies and procedures and diverted some of these old facilities to this particular pumping station, you were going to cause sewage to back up into Harris Teeter. But I think they certainly knew at some point in time that the current plant wasn't sufficient to handle the effluent that was flowing into it, and they had prior problems. We are not, as the county suggests, pursuing this matter as simply a negligence claim. I think in all of the inverse condemnation decisions that we have talked about in our briefs, it's almost impossible not to allege that somebody caused damage without using language that could potentially be interpreted as negligence language. But we believe, at a very minimum, we should be able to explore those issues in the trial court, and at that point, perhaps a summary judgment might be able to, maybe the more appropriate method to decide whether this is a pure negligence case or there was actually a taking for public use under the inverse condemnation standard.
Okay, well, under the Livingston case and your theory of the Livingston case, can you give me an example of when government action would be a negligence claim and not an inverse condemnation claim? Because it seems to me that under that theory, every negligence action by government ends up being an inverse condemnation claim.
Well, under the Livingston case, let's say in Livingston, the authority being sued in that case, which had constructed the canal right before this storm that caused it to overflow, hired a contractor to go out without any analysis and said, let's just open up this canal so that we overflow some water into the adjoining properties and cause them damage. That would be a pure negligence case. That's not what we're arguing here.
So the key is whether they do analysis in advance?
No, I think it's not whether they do analysis in advance. The key is whether they take a conscious action that would lead to the result of a party being damaged because of actions taken as opposed to policies that were being created, standards that were being utilized to maintain or operate their facility.
Well, what you say in your brief is that the difference is whether the property was damaged for a public use.
Yes, and I think that's the reason that we use the phrase public use is because of the enactment of Section 219, which now specifically defines what a public use is.
Can I follow up with the debate in Livingston as applied to your case?
Yes.
And in a nutshell, the debate in Livingston is bad things happen during a public use versus bad things happen for the purpose of a public use. I know that's a reductionist statement, but still, work with that for a second. I think I heard you earlier say quite clearly that it's part of your argument that the overflow, whether it's practice, policy, design, or whatever, was a condition that allowed the overriding public use, serving other customers and citizens, to continue. Can you point me to exactly where in either the complaint or the proposed amended complaint that was said as clearly as you just said it?
I would agree with Your Honor that the specificity that I've set forth in our argument today is not set forth specifically in our complaint or our proposed amended complaint.
Where can it be reasonably inferred from your complaint or your proposed complaint? The qualifier for the purpose of providing other public members the service?
I think there is one allegation in the proposed amended complaint where we specifically assert that there was the diversion of sewage from other sewage treatment plants to this particular plant in order to allow the system to continue to operate, and that overwhelmed this particular system.
And that's in the unaccepted amended complaint?
Correct, Your Honor. And we don't even know at this point whether the trial court considered the proposed amended complaint.
Well, he didn't grant leave, though, right?
They did not, correct. So I think I have 20 seconds left before my rebuttal. I wanted to talk very briefly about the damages issue. We think that the cases that are cited, Williams, Livingston, and Ballard, specifically allow recovery for personal property. I think that there is no question that the eminent domain cases are different because in those cases an injured party has an opportunity to remove personal property before some taking takes place. That situation didn't apply here.
Let me tell you that we don't operate the clock that way here in Virginia, but we're also known for being gracious hosts. As a result, you'll have 2 minutes, but your time has expired. You'll have two more minutes for rebuttal in this case, all right?
Thank you, Your Honor. Right.
I can't hear you.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court, I'm R.F. Trenavian, Deputy County Attorney for Arlington, here on behalf of the appellee. I know the counsel was asked a question about whether or not it was alleged that this was done on purpose. And I would submit the allegations of the complaint allege it was done on purpose. They're remarkable allegations. They allege that the county employees took affirmative active negligence and committed intentional wrongs undertaken for the purpose of causing a sewer backup. Sanitary sewers under Virginia law are required and designed to achieve total containment of flow, and they include numerous safety features. Yet, appellants allege that county employees, and this is in their complaint, intentionally bypassed safety procedures knowing it would cause a backup. That's paragraph 12G of the complaint. That appellants allege that county employees chose not to fix high flow alarms they knew did not work. That county employees chose not to repair defective equipment knowing it would fail and cause a backup. That's paragraph 16J of the amended complaint.
Why?
It
seems to me the why is the question. I mean, if you choose not to do that, you might just be negligent. But the why might change it from negligence to an inverse condemnation. So why?
Well, I would submit, Your Honor, that an intentional wrong to cause a backup on someone's property could never be for a valid public purpose. This court said in the Erickson case and in other cases that negligent acts or intentional wrongs are not taken for a public purpose. This is different than the other cases, the stormwater cases, such as the Burns case that counsel alluded to. In that case, I believe it was Fairfax County took delivery of a stormwater system that was designed and pointed their discharge chute at plaintiff's property. And of course that's a taking. If the system designed as it's intended to work, works as it's designed and intended to operate, damages your property, that should be a taking. But here, the allegations are employees of the county wrongly subverted the system, effectively sabotaged the proper working of the system, and caused a backup. I don't know. It's hard to speculate what the motives of someone like that would be. Say they were a lazy employee.
What about the possibility that the system was engineered in such a way that in order to actually accomplish the ultimate public use mission, which is to provide as much service to as many people as possible, some of the customers had to be sacrificed?
Well, I'm puzzled by that assertion, which this is the first time I've heard that, but it's alleged that the problem occurred in the plant, and all the sewer lines in this area converge on the plant. And if the plant is stopped up and doesn't work, everybody who's has lines going to that plant suffer service. Nobody gets a benefit. Everybody's backed up. In this case, had they been unable to take care of the problem and address it not as fast as they did, presumably other people down the line would also be subjected to service. But let me point out, under Virginia law, you're not permitted to have a sewer backup on somebody's property. It violates Virginia regulations. Virginia 12 VAC 5-610-350 provides that a sewer backup is a violation of existing law. It's a violation. You can't have a public purpose whatever your reason is, to cause a sewer backup. It's different from a stormwater case. And this court noted in the Roanoke Public Service Authority case versus Cheney that claims arising from the defective maintenance operation of sanitary sewer lines are decided under application of principles of tort law. And I would suggest, this court didn't say that, but I'd suggest there's a reason to treat sanitary sewer lines different from stormwater sewer lines. All of the cases cited by appellants, including the Livingston case, are all cases involving diversion of surface water or stormwater. Sanitary sewer lines are highly regulated under Virginia law. You can't discharge your sewage anywhere you want to. It's illegal to do so. And it can't, if it's illegal to do so, it can't be a valid public purpose to do it accidentally or on purpose. Now, despite this court's holding in the Cheney case, and despite all these allegations of intentional wrongs designed with the purpose of causing a backup, claims that these employees disabled or bypassed safety systems knowing it would cause a backup, despite all these allegations, rather than bringing a tort claim, appellants bring an inverse condemnation claim. And they do so despite this court's admonition in the Byler case that the purpose of Article 1, Section 11 is not to waive sovereign immunity for any damage caused to an adjoining, by an adjoining public facility. If this was a tort case, we wouldn't be arguing about whether or not the damage was for a public purpose. If this was a tort case, we wouldn't be arguing about whether or not non-appurtenant groceries were recoverable. Of course, they would be recoverable under a tort case. So the issue here really is not the lack of remedy, but the appellant's choice to bring the wrong remedy.
Wouldn't sovereign immunity protect the county in a simple common law tort action?
Sovereign immunity would protect the county, but it would not protect county employees who were negligent or committed intentional wrongs. Unless the negligence was the result of a discretionary function, then if it was gross negligence, that wouldn't be protected.
Well, they obviously would get more money in a claim of inverse condemnation than they would in a tort claim, unless Arlington County has a policy of insurance that's above the statutory cap.
Well, the county's not subject to the cap. They're different, but the county, like I believe any locality in the state, has policies of self-insurance, or they purchase insurance often through the...
I guess that might be the reason why they chose this route, but in any event, the reason is really not legally cognizable in this case.
So I would have to say I think they perhaps could recover from the court case. One of the issues in this case, of course, is the what are the damages? And the damages are itemized and specific down to the penny. As counsel alluded in his statement, there was damage to the property, but the only people before the court are the insurance companies who paid money for the loss of inventory and goods in the property. It's itemized to the penny, and it's listed in the complaint. There's no equipment or fixtures listed or claimed as damaged in this case. This court in Livingston stated that the focus of inverse condemnation is damage to real property, that only personal property appurtenant to the real estate is compensable under inverse condemnation. Appurtenant is defined in Black's Law Dictionary as annexed to a more important thing, and it defines annexed as, with regard to property, the point at which a fixture becomes part of the real estate to which it's attached.
So it would cover shelving, but not what's on the shelf.
Right. And the shelving's not part of the claim here. The only part of the claim here is the inventory and the relatively small amount of cost to remove the damaged inventory. In the Taco Bell case, this court held that the intent of the owner is paramount in determining whether the owner intended for the personal property to remain part of the real estate. Groceries offered for sale are not obviously intended to permanently remain part of the real estate, but by definition are movable stock or inventory intended to be removed from the property upon sale, or the produce spoils, or the sell-by date on the can passes to be discarded.
May I ask you this? But it's inverse condemnation under the takings clauses of either the federal or the state constitutions. Is it per se inapplicable to personal property?
It's not per se, but as this court said in Livingston, the personal property has to be pertinent to the real estate.
So the government can take your vehicle off the side of the road and run off with it for some public purpose, and you don't have an inverse condemnation claim?
You might not have an inverse condemnation claim, but you certainly have a conversion claim, or a tort claim, rather.
Well, both the Fifth Amendment and our statute refers to property. It doesn't refer to real property.
It does not, but this court stated in Livingston that it's, the focus is taking your damage to real property, and you can only recover personal property pertinent to the real estate. And it's hard to imagine if groceries that it's the intent of the owner to sell and have removed from the premises, those are pertinent to the real estate. It's hard to imagine what wouldn't be.
So if the government came into Harris Teeter and walked off with all the groceries to distribute to the public during a time of need, that would not be a taking?
I'm only hesitating because the law in an emergency situation is somewhat different, but I believe even under the statutes that govern those that kind of situation,
well, let's just say it happened during.
To compensate you for taking your groceries and sell them.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I didn't hear it.
I'm sorry.
So you think that if, let's say it's not an emergency situation, they just want to be, you know, as a Christmas gift to the local community, they could do that, and that would not be a taking of property without just compensation?
That, I would say that's not a taking of property for a public purpose. Public purpose has to be as defined in the law. The legislature defined public
purpose. See what I'm getting at. I understand the public purpose versus non-public purpose, but suppose for the sake of argument it is. Is personal property per se excluded from inverse condemnation, or for that matter, flat-out condemnation, statutory condemnation?
I'm sorry, I didn't get that wrong. Per se, no, but it's got to be a fixture. It's got to be pertinent to the real estate. It's got to be a fixture. All the cases cited by the appellants are fixtures or equipment that's bolted to the floor or something that's permanently going to stay on the real estate. Now, this, since the Livingston case, and I wanted to address Livingston briefly, I think this case is different from Livingston in any number of ways. When Livingston was decided, Virginia Code Section 1-219.1 had not been was not in effect because the flooding that occurred in that case predated the effective date of the statute. Livingston involved damage caused by surface water, not by a sanitary sewer, which, as I indicated, is highly regulated under Virginia law and under the Roanoke v. Public Service Authority case is decided under tort law. Unlike Livingston, it's alleged here that county employees purposely disabled safety systems and refused to repair defective equipment knowing a backup would result. Livingston did not involve non-pertinent personal property.
We'll go back to the one just before that with regard to notice, you know, that the government employees know about this. It seems to me that appellant is saying that we should extend Livingston in this way, and that is to say that as basically notice ends up sufficing as a duty to maintain any government project. I mean, in Livingston, we actually said that damages remained compensable if government inaction forced a private citizen to bear the cost of a public improvement. I'm having trouble also finding what the public improvement is if you look at the allegations here.
Livingston was a case where the channel was put in by VDOT. VDOT incorrectly thought they were not responsible for maintaining it and left it as it was. And so the public improvement, that drainage channel, is built as it was built, operating as it was built, caused the backup because nobody went to drain and dredged that channel. Here, the damage wasn't caused by the system operating as it was built, but by the allegation is employees subverting the system and turning off safety procedures that would have prevented that, thus causing it. And this court has never held that the intentional circumventing of a public system purposely to cause a backup and to cause it to fail constitutes a public use. To put it simply, I don't believe a system can fail for a public purpose. If it fails, the public purpose is defeated. Public purpose is providing sewer service. The section of 1-219.1 relied upon by appellants, which is subsection 4, is they're claiming it was a public purpose because that subsection says property is taken for the provision of an authorized utility service.
But if the decision were to by whatever means, to actually divert the sewage to a place that for a policy reason would subject the county to less damages, would that be different? They say, look, if we're either going to have this uniformly or we're going to have this in a certain area, and as a matter of policy, we're going to limit our damages by making sure that if it's going to overflow, it's going to overflow over here and not over there. Now, wouldn't that be a public purpose?
That's effectively what this court said in Livingston, that they said that VDOT chose to use these people's property as a detention pond. But the difference, I think, is in the area of a sanitary sewer, you're not permitted to do that by law.
Well, that, it may be also a violation of health regulations, criminal laws, all kinds of things. Irrespective of all of that, isn't that a public purpose?
Not if it violates the law.
Well, the idea is that it's a public purpose because it limits the public damage that Arlington County may very well sustain. So I'm not sure that, I mean, I understand you're saying that you can't have a public purpose that violates the law, but I'm wondering if my hypothetical would be a great exception to that, because you're doing it for a public purpose to limit the damages to Arlington County. So it's a public purpose. Now, it's also against the law.
And I would say, by definition, a violation of law cannot be a public purpose. That's what this court said in Erickson. That's what this court said in Oaks. And it's striking to me that anyone can contend somehow the county got a benefit out of this backup. The county's permits with Virginia Department of Public Service, Public Environment, Virginia Department of Environmental Services requires and regulates the discharge of sewage by the county. It can't just be discharged anywhere the county chooses to. It's highly regulated. It's got to be treated and discharged in accordance with that permit. And somebody making a decision to take the sewage and put it somewhere else would violate that permit. It couldn't be for a public purpose.
Your opposing counsel is going to have two more minutes, and so do you.
Thank you.
So you may have two more minutes. That's what I'm saying. He's going to have two more minutes, and so do you.
I apologize.
I take it like...
no, sir, rebuttal.
Like opposing counsel, you're not asking us to reconsider Livingston.
I'm not. I think Livingston is distinguishable for all of the reasons I stated. Livingston, I'm hesitant to say it muddied the waters a bit, but it did muddy the waters slightly as what's it taking.
It's a very good analogy.
But unlike Livingston,
I'm afraid what the analogy is going to be of this sewage backup.
we all are. Unlike Livingston, the statute 1-219.1 was not applicable. It was not considered. Livingston was surface water, not sanitary sewer service. Livingston wasn't the purposeful subverting of safety procedures and machinery in place to cause a backup on purpose, and Livingston didn't involve non-personal property like the groceries involved here. And I'd say in closing that if any damage that occurs when the government's carrying out a governmental function results in inverse condemnation, then a snowplow that's out plowing the street and accidentally or purposely hits your retaining wall would subject localities to liability under inverse condemnation for what is really a tort. The appellant's attempt here to characterize the tortious injuries, and they've alleged these are tortious injuries, resulting from a sewer backup as arising in inverse condemnation is contrary to the new statute 1-219.1 and Roanoke Public Service Authority versus Cheney, which says these are tort actions.
All right, I think your time has expired at this point. Thank you very much for your argument. Madam Clerk, can you put 2 minutes on the clock? Thank you, you have. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, I would point out that the Cheney case cited by the county is really not opposite here. In Cheney, the allegation was that the sewer authority breached a contract to properly handle stormwater runoff. The Cheney case did not involve inverse condemnation at all. That phrase, inverse condemnation, is not even used in Cheney, and the comment relied upon by the county is really dicta found in a footnote. In Livingston, the court found that inverse condemnation claims against VDOT did not fall just because it arose from VDOT's subsequent operation of and failure to maintain the relocated channel, rather than from VDOT's relocation of the channel and construction of the beltway. That's exactly our argument here. We're not talking about the original design of this system, but we're talking about the county's failure to maintain and operate this pump station and its decision from a cost-cutting perspective to fail to maintain the equipment, which caused the public taking of the Harris-Teeter property.
Where are your allegations to support the fact that this is the cost of a public improvement, as opposed to what you just said, maintaining a public improvement?
I think if you follow the liberal pleading standards in Virginia and take a look at a minimum at our proposed amended complaint, and in particular...
No, but we're looking at the original complaint, not the amended complaint. Where are they in the original complaint?
They do not find... They are not specifically set forth in the original complaint, other than a general allegation of a public use. I would point out that...
So then how could we affirm this case?
Your Honor, I'll answer the question. I think the court will have to consider whether or not there was a sufficient setting forth of allegations in the original complaint that the trial court should have either allowed us the right to amend, which is liberally granted in Virginia. I would point out that Livingston came before this court on a second amended complaint. We don't know why, all right? Colette, which is another case decided under the new statute, came before or was decided based on a second amended complaint. And we think under the liberal standards for amendments in this case and the way you look at complaints, at a minimum, the trial court should have allowed us to amend our complaint and make the allegations in response to the issues that have been raised.
Justice McClanahan, does that prompt any more questions from you?
No.
You want to follow up?
No. So you have to win on assignment of error, too.
I'm sorry?
You have to win on assignment of error, too. Because you
assignment of error two on the amendment.
Right.
Well, theoretically, this court could look at our original complaint and interpret it liberally and conclude that we've at least set forth sufficient information that supports our arguments in the case. That would be our first position. If the court doesn't believe that we've made sufficient allegations in the original complaint, then we would ask the court to rule in our favor on allegation or error number two and allow us to amend our complaint and proceed in the trial court.
All right, your time has expired. We appreciate you coming down from Philadelphia. Hope you enjoyed your stay here.
Thank you.
Call the next case.